right, welcome back to the podcast, everybody. It is week two of the small and short Hosea series that we started last time. So I'm really excited to dive back into Hosea. I've been studying all morning and over the last couple weeks just to really get it in me what I want to portray, especially in these last two parts of Hosea. They really are like so intricate and so many things are going on in Hosea, especially pointing towards Jesus coming. It's really, really cool to see all that kind of unfold from the perspective of people who didn't know who Jesus was yet. It is just really, really cool. So part two is going to be mostly on chapters, like the second part of chapter 4 through chapter 10. There is a lot of stuff going on there. Obviously, I would recommend if you haven't read Hosea yet and if you haven't heard the first part of this series, I would go ahead and go read those chapters and then go listen to the first part of the series just so you kind of know what's going on before we dive into the details of chapter 4 through 10, just so you kind of get the context of what's going on. But I will go over it just a little bit before I begin talking about this. Obviously, this is all just based on my own experience reading these chapters and what the Lord showed me and commentaries and videos and all that stuff, just really to give you more of a deep understanding of these chapters from my perspective. But there are so many other resources you can go look at too. Enduring Word is a great one. The Bible Project is a great one. That's where a lot of my points come from. A lot of the stuff that I learn is from those resources. Just to kind of talk through this with you and show you more about Hosea and more about the Bible as a whole, and hopefully aid in your relationship with Jesus. So let's dive in. To recap, Hosea is basically 14 chapters of the 25 years of his preaching and teaching. A majority of it is poetry, which is what makes it so emotional, so moving, and really just gives you a picture of God's personal side and his emotions and how he deals with people who are unfaithful. And in part one, we really went over how God is a faithful husband and how Israel is unfaithful and how that is portrayed in the marriage between Hosea and Gomer. Just as a review, Hosea is the prophet in these chapters, and God basically instructs him to marry a woman who is a prostitute. And though they have kids together and all this stuff, she continues to be unfaithful to him, basically showing the example of God's relationship with Israel, where God is continually faithful and yet Israel continues to cheat on him, choose other pagan gods, and then still tries to have a relationship with God at the same time. It's obviously just not a very loyal relationship. So that's what part one was all about, just learning about how to fully surrender to God instead of chasing other things. Now this part really is a continuation of those ideas, obviously, because that is really the full theme of Hosea. The main theme is, though we are unfaithful, God's mercy and kindness is more powerful than sin. Therefore, he continues to rescue us from ourselves and make us his once again, over and over. That is the story of the Bible. That is the story of our redemption story. And that is the story of Hosea. And really every book in the Bible, but this book specifically really paints that picture very beautifully. Basically chapters 4 through 10 is now going through, as you read it, it is kind of difficult to read because you see the judgment that's coming for Israel because of their unrepentant hearts, because of the way that they have treated God, and really just the natural consequences to the ways they have acted and lived their lives. And so there's a lot of details that are surrounding the actual like geography of this, the different lands that I believe it's Samaria that would come and conquer Israel because of their disobedience, God allowing those nations to rule over Israel, just a lot of different consequences and judgments that come over Israel because of how they've acted and just natural consequences. And so it is difficult to read because it's dark. There's a lot of dark things going on in these chapters. And basically what I want to cover from these chapters is not necessarily like the nitty gritty details of all the judgments that come, but really just the idea behind, one, how could Israel have avoided this? And two, like, what is the main thing that we as believers can get out of this today that can aid in our, knowledge of God today and our relationship with Jesus? So basically what's going on is Israel is cheating, as we've discussed. And they are basically telling God, hey, I want to, you know, still offer sacrifices to you. I want to still be in relationship with you, but I also want to go and have relationships with these other gods, to go and offer sacrifices to these other gods, and so forth. They're basically telling God, I want an open relationship, and you're not my only lover. And that's pretty harsh. That's not something that, you know, anybody would respond well to, especially the creator of this nation, the creator of these people. And essentially, what God says in response, I'm going to pull up my Bible pages. If you see me glancing down in the video version of this podcast, which you can also get to, which is available for Patreons in the $15 tier a month and above. That really helps with visuals, and if you connect better with, like, watching somebody, that would be the route to go. But anyway, if you see me glancing down, I am looking at all of my notes that I've written, and my Bible, where a bunch of other notes are as well. But yeah, reading through these chapters was super moving for me, because it's just really sad, especially 6, 7, 8, and 9 is very, very, I guess, wait. Yeah, 10, 2. Yeah, all of them are just really, it's sad, because you're seeing God's anguish and the way that he's responding to Israel breaking his heart over and over. But yeah, so I'm going to read a few of these scriptures for, Hosea 6:6 says, for I desire steadfast love and not sacrifice, the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. But like Adam, they transgress the covenant. There they dealt faithlessly with me. And so this is kind of the baseline verse for this whole part that we're going to be talking about, is the idea of the knowledge of God, and what it means to know of God and really know him in relationship, and how the difference between those two things would have saved Israel a lot of heartache. Because if you truly know God, you're not going to walk away from him. Of course, we're all sinful, we're all imperfect. But when you truly know him, when you're truly in a relationship with him and know the depth of his love, know the depth of his mercy, you're not going to be chasing other gods and other things that are going to fulfill and satisfy you, like Israel was doing. And so, you know, you see in Hosea 8:14a, it says, for Israel has forgotten his maker. I remember reading that and being like, dang, like, that's just so descriptive. That's exactly what happened. They forgot their maker. And basically, I just kind of want to discuss how vital it is that we know the difference between just having some form of intellectual knowledge of God and knowing, you know, maybe the theology and knowing the scriptures and all of that stuff, but then the difference between that and knowing God fully. And it's not that the intellectual knowledge of God is bad. It's not. It's a tool. But it's not going to aid in your loving relationship of God. And it's all about, like, experiencing God. It's all about, like, having that time with him, worshiping, praying, like, connecting with him as a person. And I have a lot of kind of just examples of how to make this kind of come to life for all of us. Like, okay, so you're going to take a test, right? And you've heard all of the vocabulary terms. You've heard all of the stuff that you need to know. So you know of all that stuff. You know, let's say that it's a science test on cells. You know the names of the different parts of the cell, you know its function, but you don't know all of the ins and outs of the cell yet. You're not going to do very well on the test. You've heard the stuff, you know of the stuff, but you don't actually know all of the stuff to do well on the test. Another example would be, you know, you're dating this guy named John. John's a really sweet guy, and, you know, he brings you flowers, and you go on fun little dates, and all that stuff, but it's been, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, and he proposes, and you don't really know what to do, because you don't really know John, you know, like, you know of John, you know, he's a sweet guy, you know, he, the certain things he likes to do, those kind of things, but you don't know the ins and outs of what makes John, John, and if you are gonna fit together for the rest of your lives. You've never seen each other in an argument, you've never seen each other, you know, how you handle stress. You've never seen, you know, the darker sides of that person in respect of, do I want to spend the rest of my life with this person? And so it's very similar to the covenant between Israel and God here. Israel is like, yeah, God, I will jump into a forever relationship with you. I know you're good. I know you're merciful. You're cool. Like, we've spent some time together. But they didn't take the time to actually know God. enough to be like, actually, I want to spend the rest of my life with you, and you are worth a lifelong commitment where I don't need to commit myself to anything else. Basically, what they did is they got in a relationship with God, and then they got into a bunch of other superficial relationships with other gods. Another big thing about Israel during this time is they really trusted their political power. And so they basically relied on the strength of the nations around them and just a lot of politics, and basically were like, yeah, I trust God, but when God fails, I'm going to trust in the politics and the power of my nation, and the nations around me. And so that's really just how they went about a relationship with God, is just a superficial knowledge. And so that's really what I want to talk about most, in this part, really just a short and sweet reminder of what it means to truly know God, and what it means to just superficially know him. And I'm going to go over to Psalm 63, because this just, I believe it's Psalm 63. Hold on. Let me find it and see. But this really paints a picture of knowing God intimately and not just knowing of him. David is always a beautiful place to go, when you are looking for examples of really any sort of emotion. David's words are always so beautiful and really paint beautiful pictures of our relationship with God, whether it's a dry season or a plentiful season. But yeah, this is what I was looking for. I'm just going to read it because it's so good and it's not long. Oh God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you as in a dry and weary land where there is no water. So I have looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory, because your steadfast love is better than life. My lips will praise you, so I will bless you as long as I live. In your name I will lift up my hands. My soul will be satisfied as with fat and rich food, and my mouth will praise you with joyful lips. When I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night, for you have been my help, and in the shadow of your wings I will sing for joy. My soul clings to you, your right hand upholds me. But those who seek to destroy my life shall go down into the depths of the earth. They shall be given over to the power of the sword. They shall be a portion for jackals. But the king shall rejoice in God. All who swear by him shall exult, for the mouths of liars will be stopped. And then a note that I had written, I think this was actually about... Oh, wait. Hold up. We're also going to read Psalm 62. So back one chapter, this is also a fantastic example of the same things that we're looking for, just the difference between superficial knowledge of God and honest and earnestly seeking him, just the full knowing of him. For God alone my soul waits in silence. From him comes my salvation. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be greatly shaken. How long will all of you attack a man to batter him, like a leaning wall, a tottering fence, the only plan to thrust him down from his high position? They take pleasure in falsehood, they bless with their mouths, but inwardly they curse. For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence, for my hope is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress, I shall not be shaken. On God rests my salvation and my glory, my mighty rock, my refuge is God. Trust in him at all times, O people, pour out your heart before him, God is a refuge for us. That's not the whole thing, but that's a little over half of it. And a note that I wrote is, I am firmly resolved to look nowhere else but the Lord for my stability. He is not my defender only, but my actual protection. And so this is the exact opposite of how Israel viewed God. So you hear kind of David's words where he's talking about the men who are seeking to destroy his life. You know, how long will all of you attack a man to batter him? And then he says, for God alone, oh my soul, wait in silence. For God alone, I'm waiting. And whereas Israel would kind of look, Israel in the timing of Hosea is kind of looking at God as like, you know, one of their options. Like, for God plus other things, I wait in silence. For God, you know, plus my political advantage, I wait. And yet David here is thirsting after God in the sense of there is nobody else. Yes, you may provide temporary solution to the issue that I'm feeling, but you're never going to satisfy my soul. And so this just really gives a beautiful, you know, juxtaposition of the two different, or, you know, another word would be a beautiful contrast between the two different stances. And these weren't in the same timings, really, but just to give you just words, two poems, essentially. Hosea, the poems of Hosea and him talking about what Israel's perspective on their relationship with God is versus David's poems. And his perspective talking about how God you know, he is the only one that's going to fully satisfy, not just defend, not just, you know, give help when needed, not just heal, but be my full protection, be my salvation, be my fortress. And what's really cool about all of this is leading up to part three, talking about the salvation of Israel, leading into just so much more than the defending of nations and political advantage and all of those things. It's not just about that. It's about God sending himself so that we could be his forever and for him to be able to love us freely. I'm not going to jump into it, even though I really, really want to. You're going to have to wait for part three. But essentially, all of this heartbreak and emotion and, you know, talking about issues that are so temporary all lead up to God basically presenting Israel with the idea of, this is so short-lasting, and I am sending a forever solution to these issues. And so that's all going to be in part three. But essentially today, I just want to leave you kind of with the thoughts of, what is the state of my knowledge of God? Of course, there is always room for growth, always room to know more, always room to get to know God more, because that really is, there's no way for us to fully know God. But really the question would be, you know, how easy is it for me to seek solution and seek satisfaction in other things rather than my relationship with God? And how deeply do I know God at this state in my relationship with him? Is it just intellectual? Is it just theology based? Or is it really based out of a deep, loving relationship with him? And so, that's basically the gist of today's thoughts. It definitely convicted me, because there really is so many times that I can easily walk away, not fully, you know, but like the imperfections of my soul and just like the sin that, you know, is in me as a human. Like, how can I continue to know God better and better and better, not just know him, but deeply experience his love on a day-to-day basis, to where I know there's nothing else that can ever satisfy me like God. So that's basically today. There's a quote that I wish I could find, and I have searched and searched, but essentially it said, like, there will never be a time where I should be fully content in my knowledge with God. Like, there would never be a time where I wake up and I'm like, yep, I know enough now, I'm good. It should be in every single day, like David, thirsting after God, getting to know him deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's how we stay true to our relationship with God, is just continuing to be after him and after his heart and learning more and more about him, because we are imperfect and we're never going to be 100% like him until we are with him. But just day to day, making that your goal to search after him consistently. And so, yeah, so ending thoughts is just never be content with how much you know about God. Like, continue to strive after him. And two, like, on a day-to-day basis, just check in with your heart of, like, am I relying on my, you know, intellectual knowledge of God? Am I relying on other things to satisfy me? Or is this a deep, like, personal relationship with God that I apply to my day-to-day life? So I love you guys, and I will see you in part three. See you later.